This is the Mike Garrigan Podcast.
Welcome to episode 2 of 12 in the 2018 podcast series from MikeGarrigan.com. My name is Mike Garrigan. I mentioned in the last episode the seemingly ongoing encounter I had with my past last fall. I didn't play a lot of shows, but every time I did, I think a sense of nostalgia informed the artistry. I found that presenting the past is, in and of itself, an art form. So what follows is a reflection on what I experienced last fall as what I would call a legacy artist who presented previously released and previously popular works of music. Interstitched within this narrative, you'll hear selections from one of the shows I did back in October of 2017. At this show, I performed Dirty Wake, the Collapsus LP, in mostly its entirety, in a solo acoustic format on stageit.com. And what you'll hear is the audio feed that I sent out to the server. So I recorded it as it went out. Now, this entire show is available to community members, and you can find out more about the community by heading to my website, MikeGarrigan.com, and clicking on the heading Community. So, no matter how far away I go from my past, I can always find my way back to Pick's Gym. North Durham is still quite rural, but even if the landmarks change, I've driven those back roads so many times that I could probably find the Collapsus practice space on pure intuition. Now, Pick's Gym, of course, is Ryan's studio. It has always had a very nice performance space, and we recorded nearly all of our demos there at Pick's Gym, and we rehearsed for all of our tours there as well. So naturally, we rehearsed for our October 1st Pinhook show at Pick's Gym as well. Walking into a Collapsus rehearsal nowadays is quite fun. Carlos always has some kind of amazing anecdote from his full and interesting life. Mick has similar musings about his life as a restaurateur and family man, and well, Pickett always has a handful of stories from his time as front-of-house engineer for the band My Morning Jacket. Now, these three guys, they also have a rich personal history from decades before Collapsus even got together. So as I walk into a rehearsal and I'm setting up my gear, I'll always hear this and that about so-and-so, who they went to high school with, or how their friend Johnny married into the Guthrie family, as in Woody and Arlo Guthrie. Or there'll be something about how no one currently knows where Zeke is. But these three are an organic unit. And with me in the front, we animate the songs that I wrote and we become the band Collapsus. So of the 300 or so shows that we played, I can count many that were excellent, but there were maybe five or six that were what I would call near transcendent experiences because we were all linked up, sharing the same brain, almost acting like one person. So we played the Pinhook in Durham, North Carolina, on October 1st, 2017. And after we loaded in and checked, we all ventured around the corner to the Quarter Horse Arcade. And one of my fondest memories as a kid was walking up to the arcade at the Cross Creek Mall in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and spending $5 in quarters on games like Golden Axe or Spy Hunter and Donkey Kong. Now, adjusted for inflation, that's like spending about $10 now. But I think the key to enjoying the arcade is the relative scarcity of only having, say, $5 to spend. So you had to ration wisely. And I remember back in the 80s, even when I'd go over to some rich kid's house to play, you know, a freestanding game machine that no one ever had except for the rich kids, or play, you know, at some retro game park with unlimited plays, it wasn't as fun. It wasn't. But the Quarter Horse in Durham does it right. They have retro games like Spy Hunter, and you have to have quarters to play them. Unfortunately, I did not have any quarters, but it was just kind of good to be around the lights and the spectacle of an 80s arcade. But then a few hours later, when the lights went down and the show began, we played to a full pinhook, a full house. It was nice. I wore a shirt that I hadn't worn since the Dirty Wake tour, and the set was good, and we played well. We played a set that would have been typical of the summer of 2000 when we were at our peak. Of course, a lifetime has passed since then, but still, it was sort of like a time machine stepping back into a space that I used to occupy frequently and completely. And in some ways, I felt like an actor on stage playing the role of someone I once was. But when we first got back together in 2013 for what became our reunion identity, many asked me if we were going to be recording a new record. And initially, crafting new material with these guys sounded very appealing. But then again, I got to think about the utility of a legacy band promoting new material. And I find that that utility is outweighed by preserving the old material. There's almost an imperative to do that. And most fans of legacy bands respond to old popular material and not something new. Also, as I thought about it, Collapsus as we were in 2013 and then 2015 and even in 2018 now is quite different from what Collapsus was in the year 2000. So, in some ways, we do better to approach the older material through the lens of experience than to launch into new art.
Here we go. I'm here. nothing in this world ever stopped you. Nothing in this world ever brought you down to where I am. Yeah, nothing in this world ever stopped you. Nothing in this world ever brought you down to where I am.
So the committee that booked the North Carolina State Fair entertainment asked Athenaeum to open for Marcy Playground, and that show ended up happening in Dorton Arena a couple weeks after the Collapsus show. And Dorton Arena, gosh, what a cool place. It's a venue where, gosh, many legendary, epic rock shows went down, as far back as rock shows went down. I mean, for example, the Kiss Rock and Roll Over Tour, when it went through Raleigh, landed at Dorton Arena. So it was a big deal for me personally, and I guess to some extent spiritually. But the set was going to be televised on UNC TV, so it felt like kind of a big deal. And so we began rehearsing for this October 17th show a week prior. I had to switch gears in my head away from Collapsus world to Athenaeum world. But a bit of a caveat here. Technically, this group wasn't really Athenaeum. It was more like Mark Cano and myself with a rhythm section rather than Athenaeum. But the marquee value of the former is weak compared to the latter, so we decided to call it Athenaeum. And, you know, we also played two Collapsus songs and one of Mark's solo album songs, but the rest of the material, well, that was Athenaeum. So I felt okay with that, and I hope you did too. So in the band, we had Eddie Walker on drums and Andy Ware on bass. Now, this was a big deal for me personally, because Eddie was the drummer of the band Bus Stop, a legendary North Carolina band from the early 90s. And Andy played bass in, I guess, the last iteration of Dylan Fence as it was still Dylan Fence. And then he also played bass in Hobex. So, playing with these guys was, I mean, it's quite an honor to play with Eddie and Andy. So it was just a great experience for me, just headspace-wise. But, you know, Eddie and Andy, top-notch musicians, and they inspired a lot of what became the North Carolina alternative rock sound of the mid-90s. So, but anyway, we had two rehearsals, and then I think we all had it together and we were ready to do the show. We rehearsed at a sort of a common rehearsal space that's shared by several bands that's near the Greensboro Coliseum area. And it's so well hidden. I mean, it's very well hidden. And I pulled up to what I thought was the rehearsal space. And, you know, there was a loading dock, and it looked like a place where you would go in and there'd be a band with a PA, you know, set up to rehearse. But when I knocked on the door, I was greeted by this burly guy, and he was from one of the local theater set production warehouses because he had some overalls with the theater logo on it. And I asked him, "Hey, is this the rehearsal space?" And he replied, "I don't know anything about that. This is a professional production facility." I'm like, "All right, what?" And he scoffed and he just slammed the door. Like, okay, thank you. I was very generous. But anyway, but the funny thing was, it turned out that the practice space was literally next door. I mean, literally next door to this place. I mean, how could this guy not know that there was a, I don't know. I was mad for maybe 30 seconds, and then I got over it because I got to load in my gear, and we began rehearsing, and I got to play with this great band, so everything was okay. I got to say that this show at Dorton Arena was one, and is one of the highlights of my entire life, and it's not really because it was just a big show. I mean, I've played lots of big shows, and it wasn't necessarily because it was archived on TV. I mean, you can go see it on UNC TV. But here, what was great about it was my children got to see me play in a fitting venue for what Athenaeum was and how I like to remember it as. You know, it was just, there's something about, you know, looking out the crowd and you see your son and he's standing on the barricade with his mom kind of holding his waist there. And he says, "That's my daddy." And gosh, I was just like, man, that was good. That was a good moment. And, but anyway, not long after we got through On My Mind, which was the third song, my son became much more interested in the Ferris wheel outside that you could see through the window. But my daughter, Ivy, she got to see the show, and she enjoyed the whole thing, and well, most of it. But that was just a really good moment for me, and I'm glad that a venue like that exists to preserve what that band is. You know, and I guess the grandeur of the Athenaeum show at the fair got me thinking about the ways in which we as artists, we can present ourselves in the wake of the nostalgia that may be associated with our work, if that makes any sense. And what both the Athenaeum show and the Collapsus show, what they had in common, and what I think both shows got right, was presenting each band in an enjoyable, exciting and familiar context. And by enjoyable, I mean the venues were fitting for the occasion. We weren't playing on some guy's back porch, or we weren't playing in a suburb of New Jersey and no one was there, you know, which has happened. But by exciting, I mean there was some relative scarcity in the frequency of the shows. Neither band had played in over a year. And by familiar, I mean that both bands kind of stuck to the main playlist with few, if any, departures from what the nostalgic fan would expect. And after the show, I walked the Midway, and I had never been to a North Carolina State Fair, and man, was it amazing. Now I know what the fuss is all about. I mean, I've lived here since 1985. North Carolina since 1985. Never been to the State Fair. And wow, what an experience. You know, if you've never been, imagine a city of neon lights and the smell of funnel cake and fried food just wafts through the crowd of people, and you just hear carny talk everywhere, like $5 for a few throws at this impossible to win game where you knock over a milk jug or something. I mean, it's just all that, you know. So I grabbed a cheesesteak from a vendor, and then eventually I ran into my family over at the kiddie rides, because that's where they would be, you know. I got to ride the Yellow Submarine with Isaac, and we plan to go back next year, but probably not to perform, but to enjoy the funnel cake and ride the rides. So, you know, the Dorton Arena show, back to that, it came with the usually required laminates and the backstage sequestering and security protocols. And Athenaeum, in this iteration, I got to say, played again in mid-December at the Blind Tiger. And we at that show, we were opening for Hobex in Greensboro. And that show was a lot of fun, but I made note of something that goes with being in a band that had a stretch of popularity that I had completely forgotten about. And, you know, the Dorton Arena show, it wasn't an issue because we had a backstage area, but the Blind Tiger is a smaller venue and it's not as sequestered. So, you know, I guess in law school and in the professional world, there's this sort of unspoken rule of civility, personal space and respect. There's certain things you don't do. But in the drunken late night bars, there's no such thing. And after our set at the Blind Tiger, I enjoyed talking with fans here and there. It was great. But it did get to the point where I was unable to watch Hobex because, you know, drunk people and non-drunk people alike were touching me or trying to touch me or obstructing my time with stories about how they used to listen to us back in the day. And it was just kind of uncomfortable. And, you know, to be sure, I'm flattered by flattery. I am appreciative of the comments, but it came a point where I guess there was too much and it got uncomfortable and I couldn't watch the band. It was impossible. So about halfway through the set, I went back to the dressing room and I just listened to Hobex through the rafters and I just felt smothered. But anyway, it's something to think about. And I guess that goes with the nostalgia, but the other thing about being a nostalgia act is understanding that, I guess, I have to understand that I'm going to hear a lot of stories about what a band that I was in meant or means to people and how it helps them recall a particular place from a long time ago. And it's something to be grateful for sure. But the rub is that often when people have a profound connection with an album from a period in their own lives, and then once they've moved on to something else, as we always do, the band, for whatever reason, doesn't come with them. And what happens is this leads to potentially insensitive comments from fans like, hey, why did you guys quit after your first album? And it's like, well, we didn't. We even put out three subsequent albums, or I moved on and did some solo records that didn't catch on, but, you know, I still worked twice as hard to make something happen. But, you know, part of being in the nostalgia business is taking it on the chin and understanding that not all your fans like everything you do.
Automatic, I never really had it. The love that grows in time. Apophatic, cataphatic. She's really not the tragic kind. She's just waiting for love, but she hasn't got the time. Maybe someday. Fatty, cataphatic. emphatic. She's really not the tragic kind. She's just waiting for love, but she hasn't got a clue. Maybe someday complain. Don't say it to me now, shut up now. Love will only break your heart. Don't say it to me now, shut up now. We were broken from the start. It's automatic, it's automatic. It's automatic. It's automatic, baby. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't say it to me now, you shut up now. Love will only break your heart. Don't say it to me now, shut up now. We were broken from the start. Don't say it to me now, shut up now. Love will only break your heart. Don't say it to me now, shut up now. Shut up now.
So the solo acoustic world is, and always has been, whatever I want it to be. And as a result, you know, my fans either take it or leave it. And sometimes, in cases like Building a Hole or Lessons of Autumn or The Promise of Summer, they take it. In other instances, like Voyage of the Malamander, well, they leave it, mostly. The latter half of the year, my eyes got much bigger than my stomach in regards to playing shows. Now, when I'm reading law school for like 8 hours a day, which happens, you know, I think to myself, wow, it would be really fun to go out and play a show. But then when I actually do it, I forget about the rehearsals, the promotion, the planning, and dragging the sound system out of storage, and the waiting around, and just how much time it takes to put on a single show, let alone several. But I did a couple. And, you know, Common Grounds is a coffee shop that's just around the corner from the Lindley Park filling station. Fishbones and Sticks and Stones, and these are three Greensboro restaurant staples, and you'll find them on the corner of Walker and Elam, and if you're in town, in Greensboro, I recommend any of them. But the Old Blind Tiger itself is not far from Common Grounds either, so this is a familiar stomping ground here. And the shop itself is an open room that has a small game room in the back. And, you know, the shop is really cool. The coffee shop, it's got totally, like, unique drink names. For example, for espresso shots, if you get one shot, it's a Bruce Willis. If you get two, it's Bruce Lee. Three is Wesley Snipes, and four is Chuck Norris. And so I pulled the sound rig, the complete sound rig, out of storage, but when I arrived at the venue, I was surprised to find a completely flown PA and a small mixer. That's great. And, you know, I brought in my own microphone for vocals, but it was such a nice treat to go to a venue where you're not expecting a sound system and to find a rig that's better than what you brought. So thank you, Common Grounds. What was odd about this show in particular was that, well, everyone who attended was very familiar with my music. There weren't any stragglers like, I've never heard this guy before. I mean, I recognized everybody. And they knew all the deep cuts and, like, the early songs. So from right away, I thought this is going to be interesting. And so the show, it slanted decidedly early in my catalog with mostly tracks from Building a Hole and Lessons of Autumn, and the crowd just requested them, and that's great. And I could tell that the early music had sparked different resonances within the people who requested a given song. It was as if I felt them feeling what they felt 20 years ago when they first connected with that music. It was a nice moment. But lately, you know, I felt a sort of an aesthetic obligation to preserve old music, the old music that I've done as closely as possible. So I'll try to play it the way I played it back in the day, with a few modifications for the sake of maybe sanity or health. I don't, for example, scream until I lose my voice for 5 days like I did back in the day. That was part of the 90s thing. So now I sing from my diaphragm. I've had vocal lessons or two, and I let the PA do the work so I can do mine. But, you know, those two early records, they're difficult in more ways than one. And you know, the subject matter, it deals with traumas. Building a Hole addressed coming-of-age traumas, while The Lessons of Autumn tried to make the best of relationship traumas. And they're difficult places to visit, and I got to be careful not to fall into autopilot because the old emotions come back too. And so what I do is I try to concentrate on performing the song and stay in the moment and sort of feel the dialogue in the room. And, you know, I like what the song November does and how it does it, but I don't feel anywhere as detached or alone as I did when I wrote that song. And when I do experience feelings of loneliness or detachment, they're tempered by a loving family and a group of supporting friends. So I'm a different person than I was back then, and I have to remember that when I play these songs. But, you know, I think maybe that's why you'll find legacy artists that will, say, perform, you know, one record or another in its entirety, in addition to it being just kind of cool. But maybe that way all the emotions they were feeling get lumped in at once for both the fans and the artist. So last fall, as you've been hearing throughout the show, I performed the Collapsus album in its entirety on stage at. And I called this collection Acoustic Wake. And in a lot of ways, this kind of goes against what I've been talking about because I'm acoustically performing band material, so I'm altering it. But I'm trying to keep it in the same mode as it would have been had I done an acoustic show back then, if that makes sense. So, you know, going into a show where the set list is kind of constrained, it's liberating. On these kinds of shows, you know, you play the record. And on this show, since I was limited to 50 minutes, I had to drop a song. And IOL was the logical choice, seeing as how it was the least played of all Collapsus songs. It's a bit anachronistic. And that song was the subject matter for a near fan mutiny when the album came out. We had this song called Sundrop that we always played out in our live set, and we still play it when we get together as Collapsus. But for whatever reason, it never translated into a recording that really captured it. It showed up on a few demos, and we even worked on it with David Bianco in pre-production for Dirty Wake. But, you know, IOL had this cool structure, and it had this great canvas for doing some cool studio tricks on the second side of the album. So that's why it ended up on there. I like it. But, you know, the idea of dialing in to the internet on a phone line is so foreign. it's like a telegraph. But I also did a second stage show. This was before the Collapsus one. And it was more of a request show that turned into a hodgepodge and ended up canceling the holiday show because, well, Mark and I decided to do an acoustic duo charity show in Charlotte. And a fan and friend of ours had been battling cancer for quite some time, and we thought it'd be nice to chip in. You know, insurance doesn't cover everything. And Nicole, our friend and fan, passed away shortly after the show. But it was good for Mark and I to do that for her, but also it's good for us to do the acoustic duo shows every now and again. Part of, I guess, the aftermath of Collapsus and post-Athenaeum, you know, Mark and I play these songs as an acoustic duo, and it has sort of a life of its own. So what I like about those shows is that, you know, we can widen the net a little bit with the set list. You know, we can play Collapsus songs, Athenaeum songs, solo songs by each of us where we back each other up. We can play MG4 songs, covers, whatever, you know, and these shows attract a wide demographic of fans, so the nostalgia rules aren't so hard and fast. And so last year at our Charlotte show, one before 2017, I played a new song and people didn't get up to get a drink or go to the bathroom. It was great. And so next time you go see a legacy act and they say, here's a new song, notice how many people get up and walk out or go do something else. As an aside, if you ever get to see Def Leppard, which is something I think everyone should do, full disclosure, they often open their sets with a brand new song, which is bold, but this is so cool because the excitement of the light show and the general tenor of seeing the band for the first time after the lights go down, it makes the new songs pop as well. So maybe that's where the new songs should go.
Fallen heart fell in my hands. She said, even in this cold December sky, I know you are the center of my life, and all that could mean. So I do for joy, and I sing out loud. And her smiling face, she makes me proud. And this frozen world, somehow it all falls down. Somehow it all falls down. We hardly never thought our love would grow, ever go beyond Wonderland. She said, I will always keep you in my heart, 'cause we can be together and apart. It's all just a dream. So I do for joy, and I sing out loud. And her smiling face, she makes me proud. And this frozen world, somehow it all falls down. Somehow it all falls down. And I'm gonna hang on till the end, all that could mean. Another year ends and then begins. It's all just a dream. Still I'm gonna love you where I stand. If I stand at all, I'm gonna do the best I can. Yeah. she wished under the stars. So I do for joy, and I sing out loud, and a smiling face, she makes me proud. And this frozen world, somehow it all falls down. Somehow I do.
And the band plays on. So on April 7th of this year, 2018, Athenaeum will return for the 20th anniversary celebration show for the album Radiance. And the show will feature the original lineup, which is Alex, Mark, and Nick, along with me in a supporting role. And so at this point, I'm honestly not sure who else will be participating, but I've made clear, hey, I'm here for support. So, you know, one time during one of the farewell shows, Gray Brewster, one of the older guitarists, incidentally, the one that, actually, I didn't replace him. I replaced John Crook. But anyway, he was the guitar player from the heyday of Athenaeum. And so he joined the band on stage. And so what I did is I got to run out and watch the band play as I remember them before I joined. So it was great. I hope something like that happens, because that's remarkable. But you know, if it doesn't, I'm going to try to preserve that guitar player role in Athenaeum to the best of my ability, because that's what I'm there to do. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed the show. Next month, talk more about this nostalgia and what goes into creating it and preserving it and presenting it. So see you later.